Okay, we're rolling. Hello, everyone. This is Winston Wu of Happier Abroad. And today I'm in China in a city called Shenzhen, which is just north of Hong Kong. And I'm chatting with two friends right now. One of them is with me here in Shenzhen, and the other is on Skype over in Canada. And we all basically live in China right now most of the time or travel here. So we're going to talk about our observations, experiences, and comparisons. With me, I have my friend Ethan on the forum. He goes by Ethan SG. That's Ethan underscore SG. And the SG stands for Singapore, because he's from Singapore, so he speaks really good English and Chinese. And
he's spent a few years in America as well.
Yeah, and he spent a few years in America. And he's been a great help to me, because he's helped. When I first came to China a few months ago, he translated for me and showed me around and helped me settle in. And so he's been a great help to me. Over on Skype, we have Andrew, who is a Chinese-Canadian. And he lives in Beijing some of the time, and sometimes he lives in Canada for his college. So he has a lot to share too about his experiences and observations here. So yeah, guys, thanks for joining me. I'm glad we can all do this and get all these observations out in the world, because not just the mainstream media, but even the alternative media doesn't talk about the things we do, or you know, about the social issues we do. And so it's important to get them out there so that to help raise awareness and to help balance the perception that people have of China. Because there's so many things you can say about China, pro and con. And so people, you know, people tend to have a skewed perception of China because of the bias against it from the media, especially the Western media. So there's a bit of a negative negative media coverage of China, and so we're here to help bring balance to that and give some insights that most people never hear about and are not discussed publicly. So anyways, let me start by asking you two a question. Okay, we'll go into some general topics and some issues. Okay, so one thing most people assume in China is that there are too many men and not enough women. But in the last few months I've been in China and all the cities I've been to, it seems like there's almost more women than men. I mean, I don't know if I'm noticing the women more or I'm perceiving them more. And, you know, most of them are attractive, amazingly. I mean, more attractive than the Asian Americans in America. And it seems like, yeah, there could be a surplus of women, or at least half of them are women. I don't see any shortage of women at all. I mean, how do you explain this? Is it because what I've heard is that most of the men in China, they live in rural areas like the countryside, and most of the women go to the big cities to find work, and that's why it seems like there's more women than men in China, at least in the cities I've been to. But the media and the popular perception is that there's not enough women. I mean, do you have any comment on that? Andrew, you want to comment on that first? Or?
Well, first of all, I'll just start by saying that these westernized Asian women, like whether they're Asian American, Asian Canadian, Asian British, Asian Australian, whatever, yes, they're definitely much, much less attractive than like authentic, real Chinese women than like mainland Chinese women. And if they like went to mainland China, no one would look at them because they're simply not considered attractive by like local Chinese standards. And on the issue of the gender imbalance, I also believe that, I used to believe in it, but it also seems to me, it also seems to be greatly exaggerated, because my friends in China, they don't have any problems getting a girlfriend and finding a woman to marry. So this shortage of women is definitely like highly exaggerated. And yeah, it's true. Many women, they go people from the countryside, they migrate to cities from rural areas. So, yeah, perhaps for, I guess, for the men in rural areas, for them it could be different, but for us, it's definitely not an issue.
I think there are stats actually that show that, interestingly, women tend to engage in domestic migration more than men do, for some reason. I'm not sure why. So I think a lot of the gender disparities are more prominent in the countryside, but in the cities there are a lot of women as well, and a lot of migrant women. And it's hard for the cities to get proper statistical data on the number of men and women in that particular city, because a lot of, you know, people come here unregistered, you know, and China is not very strict on controlling all these things. So a lot of people are working in the cities without the government really being able to know about it, or, you know, having them registered in the cities in any way, I think. So, as Winston says, if you come to any major Chinese city, you're not going to see a gender imbalance. I mean, there's so many women around. And what's very interesting as well is that, you know, as we've noticed, Winston, a lot of the women we meet here, a lot of the new women we meet here, or we cold approach, and, you know, a lot of the new women we get to know, I would say at least 80% of them are single, right? I mean, it's very rare for us to come across a new girl who we find is attached. You know, what do you think?
Yeah, it seems like, I don't know, 80%, maybe 50 or 60% of the girls we meet are single. So if there's a shortage of women, why are a lot of them single? You know, whereas in America, I mean, every girl I approach or meet says they have a boyfriend, and even if it's not true, they still say that because their standards are just too high, and they have this anti-male mentality where they're just, you know, they have this hateful attitude toward men, and they just don't like to meet men very much. Whereas here, you know, there's more of a positive social vibe in that there's a lot of people that will be social and want to meet you, and there's an authenticity vibe here that... It feels so genuine. You know, it's hard to put into words, but you just have to feel it. Because when I first came to China, I noticed that people didn't walk around with this paranoid vibe or body language like I'm used to in America and in Taiwan. Even Taiwan is westernized in that sense. People are very cliquish. They don't talk to strangers. They're not that open socially. It's hard to engage them. They're not as positive toward meeting strangers. So, I've definitely noticed that. I mean, anything you want to add, Andrew? Or?
Yeah, well, Taiwan's definitely very westernized, and Hong Kong as well. So I've been to both Taiwan and Hong Kong. When I went to Taiwan, I was very young. I was only like 12 or 13, so I obviously didn't have the knowledge and the insight that I have right now. But yeah, if I went back to Taiwan, let's say if I went back to Taiwan right now, I'd definitely notice how empty it is, how soulless it is compared to mainland China and Hong Kong. I've been to Hong Kong several times, like... Back when I still lived in China, I went to Hong Kong to, like, renew my Chinese visa. So, every time I went to Hong Kong, I just, as soon as I arrived to Hong Kong, I just wanted to leave, because, Hong Kong is extremely westernized and extremely workaholic and materialistic, and it's good if you... want to, and extremely cramped as well. So it's definitely mainland China has definitely just beats Hong Kong in pretty much every way.
One point I'd like to add as well is that I think one important difference between mainland China and Hong Kong and Taipei or Taiwan is that in mainland China, in the major cities, most people in the cities, and most girls you meet, are not really originally from that city itself. You know, there's so many domestic migrants, there's so many people who migrate to bigger cities for work, that you know, the vast majority of women you tend to meet in the bigger cities in China are, you know, are not, basically they're not living with their families. You know, they're here for work, and they're here living with their friends and stuff. And this means two things. I mean, firstly, it means that, you know, they're not living with their families, so they have less restrictions. So, you know, they don't have curfews. Very early on in the relationship, if you get together with them, they're going to be able to stay away at your place, you know. So intimacy happens much more easily. Secondly, it also means that, okay, a lot of girls here, first of all, they start dating later in life. Like, you know, in the US, and I think even in Taiwan and Hong Kong and Singapore now, a lot of people start dating in high school, or sometimes even middle school now. In China, it's pretty rare to find people dating in high school. I mean, you will find some, but there's a taboo against it, and you know, people are kind of forced to work hard, you know, and they have to focus on their studies at that age. But even in university, only a proportion of them, you know, actually hook up. You know, some of them don't even hook up in university. But for a lot of girls, you know, their first time getting into a relationship is in university. So what happens is that, you know, when they come to the big cities after graduation, in many cases, for many girls, it's their first or second relationship, or you know, they're looking for their second relationship or even their first relationship. So they don't have a lot of experience, and secondly, they don't have a strong network of ties and family and friends that they know in that particular city. So, you know, unlike in maybe like some other cities like Taiwan, Taipei and Hong Kong, where maybe like a lot of the good girls get taken really early on because, you know, they live in the same city all their lives, and you know, they're basically, you know, their life, social life revolves around their original social network. Whereas in Hong Kong, I mean, sorry, in a major Chinese city, they have to start from scratch in a new city altogether. So they tend to be very open to meeting new people, and you know, you find a lot of good gems, a lot of good quality women who are still single and available. I think that's an important point that maybe a lot of people outside China are not aware.
Well, let me ask you guys something. I mean, about that the stereotype of there being a shortage of women in China, I mean, is that something the Western media talks about, or does the Chinese media talk about that too? Or is that a documented fact? Or?
Well, I think I haven't really... I haven't read about this, at least from what I can remember. I haven't read about this phenomenon anywhere in, like, Chinese newspapers, or like, well, heard about this in the Chinese media, so yeah. It's much more frequently mentioned in the Western media.
To be honest, I don't follow Chinese news a lot. I mean, at least from the Chinese perspective, but
I don't really follow news anywhere.
But
really.
I think that I'm sure the Western media places a lot more emphasis on this issue than the Chinese media would, because the Chinese government would not want to, you know, create any unnecessary panic or social unease. But I think that is true. I don't doubt that the one child policy has resulted in, you know, a surplus of men and a shortage of women. But I don't think this problem is really that keenly felt at all level yet, meaning the girls who are now in their 20s and, you know, early 20s to late 20s. The problem may be more keenly felt 20 years, 10 to 20 years down the road in future generations. But now, as of now, I don't really see it. This disparity is not affecting us. And so, you know, it's not a problem that really worries us or other foreigners in the cities. I mean,
like I said, there's a quote from Albert Einstein that said that, you know, knowledge comes from experience. It doesn't come from information. So the firsthand experience we have of there being many single women that and a lot of women around trumps any news articles that you'll read. So, you know, what you experience firsthand matters a lot more to you personally, and, you know, because it's real life, it's real world, whereas, you know, the news media could be biased and filtered or controlled, and information is just information. It depends on who's giving it, so it's very... You know, it's just words, you know. So I think first, that quote from Einstein is correct, you know. The experience you have, you know, ultimately matters most. And, you know, we don't experience a shortage of women in China. So, you know, so you can tell the Western media to, you know, shove it when they keep focusing
and,
on that.
Another thing I'd like to say as well is that, I mean, demographics is one thing, but another very important thing is the attitudes of the women. You know, you can have a place that has a surplus of women, but if the attitudes of the women are all wrong and they're very feminist and they're you know, not interested in men... Or they're very bitchy and they're not suitable for long-term relationships, then, you know, that's a much bigger problem to have than having a slight surplus of men that China has.
Didn't you say, Ethan, that the birth rate in China is higher than in Japan and Taiwan and Singapore?
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting because, yes, we all know China has a one-child policy, although they're beginning to loosen it. Now, it's still pretty much in practice, especially in the big cities. But despite that, we see that the marriage rates and the birth rates in China are higher than in many other countries in developed Northeast Asia and Singapore, and Singapore itself. Despite many of these other countries having government policies that encourage, wives to parents to have more babies, despite that, China has a higher birth rate. So. I mean, that shows that really the attitudes, the values, and the traditions of a people matter far more than really the government policy in this respect.
Yeah, and it's ironic that, you know, in a country like China, where supposedly there's more government control, according to the perception of foreigners, that the birth rate is higher than in countries with that claim to have more freedom, but actually don't. So it's really telling how often, very often, what you hear in the established media is the opposite of what's true. What do you guys think about the attitudes of Chinese women? Are they still marriage minded, or are they trying to become independent, or what do you think, Andrew?
Well, for the most part, I'd say they're definitely marriage minded, much more marriage minded than Western women. By Western women, I mean like Western women of like.
And do they have traditional values too, or?
Yes. There are exceptions. You usually see them in like some first tier cities like Beijing and Shanghai. Especially in Shanghai, because Shanghai is like the most westernized city in China, so you do tend to see a lot of women in Shanghai and Beijing, some women in Beijing and Shanghai as well, in Shanghai and Beijing as well, that have that tell you things like they want to focus on building a career instead of getting married, that marriage or even a relationship is not high on their list of priorities. But for the most part, Chinese women are still quite traditional when it comes to marriage, and they're definitely, when they seek men, they're much more oriented towards the long term than like Western women.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, it's rare to find a woman in China who would hook up just for a fling. I mean, most women here are get into relationships because with a view to eventual long-term plan towards getting married. So, women here are very marriage-minded, very serious about relationships, very family-oriented. And also, I mean, the fact that they are family-oriented gives them actually more pressure to get married because they face a lot of pressure from their parents and relatives and neighbors even to get married at a younger age. So once they start reaching their late 20s, they start getting, even mid-20s sometimes, they start getting kind of a little bit worried and you know, very focused on finding the right partner. Women definitely still face that pressure over here, whereas like in Singapore where I'm from, I mean, there's less of a stigma against women, unmarried women in their 30s. I mean, that's becoming increasingly more common there. I think you see the same problem in Japan and Taiwan as well, you know. So, but in China, there is kind of a stigma against older, unmarried, single women. So a lot of women are very focused on marriage, at a very young age. So if you're looking for flings, China, or one-night stands, China is probably not the best place for you. But if you're looking for serious long-term relationships and marriage, China is definitely a pretty good place.
Yeah. Well, what do you guys, I mean, do you think, like, China is good for, like, white guys and Western white guys, or only for Asian Americans? I mean, because there is a language barrier, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, a Westerner would have to learn the language, or, you know, be rich enough to hire a translator. So,
yeah,
would you say that white Western men could do well here, or find a good wife, or is it better for Asian guys? Because, you know, I've heard a lot of mixed things about that, because some guys say they do well here and some guys don't, and some guys say that Taiwan is better for Caucasian men, whereas China is better for Asian American men. I mean, what do you guys think about that?
My feeling is that, I mean, you have to know that the vast majority of women in China, even if they're college educated, they don't speak very good English, you know, except maybe for the English majors. A lot of women here, they can understand a little bit of basic English, they can speak a little bit of basic English, but they're not comfortable with it, because compared to other countries in Northeast Asia, China still receives far less exposure to the West. So, you know, they're less, people here, many people here have never had a foreign friend and never had a genuine chance to interact with someone in English, unless they're English majors. So, I would say that if you're a Westerner and you don't speak Chinese, your options are kind of quite limited to the girls who can speak reasonably good English. So, I mean, if for you to have your best chance of, I mean, like, I guess, casting your net wider in China, you need to try to pick up at least basic Chinese. Like, I mean, okay, Winston, like, you don't speak a very high level of Chinese, but you do speak basic Chinese, right? And do you feel from your perspective that that's been enough to date girls who don't speak that much English and you only speak, you know, Mandarin?
Well, of course. I mean, I'm Chinese American, so race is not an issue for them in regards to me. I mean, it's more about,
I mean, is there a language barrier? Do you feel it with your level of Mandarin?
Not most of the time. I mean, as long as I keep it basic conversation, yeah, but it depends on whether you talk about something complicated or simple. I mean, because, you know, life has both, you know, important aspects and trivial aspects, and so yeah, I don't feel much of a language barrier. Plus, I have pretty good communication skills, and I have an electronic dictionary, which helps. So having an electronic dictionary on your smartphone or iPhone really helps when you need to fill in the gaps. But I'm not a white Western guy that doesn't speak Chinese, so you probably have to ask them. But would you say that most Chinese women are open to dating white men or Asians, or what do you think about that, Andrew?
Well, I'd say more and more Chinese women have become open to dating white men. So especially the ones in cities. Overall, I'd say, for the most part, Chinese women aren't that racist, aren't that, like, you know, I would say racist, they aren't that, they don't have, like, especially the ones that in cities that are perhaps have been exposed to like more Western things, and perhaps they tend to be open to, like, dating white guys, for the most part, they are. But as Ian mentioned, like, China, first of all, I think China, for the white guy, for the white Westerner, I think for the white Westerner who wants to, like, actually have a wife, to actually, like, find a wife, I think China has more potential. So China's a better place than Thailand or the Philippines, to be honest. And, but yeah, I also see in those, like, first tier cities, like Beijing and Shanghai, I also see a lot of those, like, typical expats who are, like, basically pickup artists that just, like, you know, like, today, Ian showed me a video of this, like, pickup artist who stole a Chinese guy's girlfriend, and, yeah, he had those kinds of guys as well. Yeah, I'd say if you're a white guy who's willing to like overcome this language barrier, then I'd say China's definitely a better place for finding like a long term partner than Thailand or the Philippines. Yeah. So
yeah, and but having
good for both white guys and Asian and like overseas Asian guys. I think regardless of whether you're white or whether you're something else, you should keep in mind that Chinese women for the most part are still extreme marriage oriented.
And I mean, also this doesn't mean that, you know, if you don't speak any Chinese at all that then you have very little options. I mean, you still have options, like, you know, for instance, people like Jisang, you know, Z-Boy in the forum, he's Korean American, he doesn't speak any Chinese really, but he, you know, he's dated a lot of girls in China, and now he's in this serious relationship with this young and cute girl in Dongguan. Z-Boy is evidence that even if you don't speak Mandarin, you can still have a pretty decent dating life in China.
Yeah, I mean, there's always exceptions, and everyone's experience is going to be different. And, you know, sometimes if it's just meant to be, it'll happen regardless of any language barriers.
Yeah.
That's what I've noticed. But statistically, in Asia, I think most Asian women prefer to date their own race, and that's pretty much true in any country and any race. You know, most white women prefer to only date white men, and most Chinese women probably prefer to only date Asian or Chinese men. So, I mean, that is a fact that can be well documented. But, you know, but if you're a white guy, you can still, you know, I mean, there are still women that will date you in China. It's just that it's just a smaller minority.
Yeah, and I think
of them to choose from.
Another important point also is your situation in China. Like, if you, when you come to China, you know, where you find a job, what kind of a job is it? You know, what your social environment, what your immediate social environment is like, and what kind of social avenues your job opens for you. Like, for instance, if you know, although I don't teach in China, I can see that, for instance, Jisang, like I mentioned earlier, he's an English teacher at a training school in China, in Dongguan, and I believe that means that he teaches a lot of working adults, you know, people whom who are actually old enough for him to be able to socialize with, not like, you know, kids or even university students, you know, so people who he can go out with after work, people who he can, you know, organize social events with. So I think his workplace environment has opened up a lot of social avenues for him to meet a lot of new people, because he goes out with his students introduce friends to him, you know, then their friends introduce more friends. So I think it's also important to consider, you know, your job and the context of your life in China. You know, if you're in a more isolated environment, like, for instance, if you're the only Westerner working in a very Chinese company, where most of them don't even speak much English at all, and you can't speak Chinese, then you may find yourself quite isolated. So, you know, it really depends on that as well.
Yeah, and there's no black and white or absolute, because, you know, we have, you know, white guys, white Western guys in our forum and in our WeChat group who claim that it's hard for them to get dates or girlfriends in China, but yet when you go out, you do see white men with on dates with Chinese women. I mean, some of those women are, you know, less attractive, of course, and some are more attractive, but, I mean, you see, you know, you see that outside, that, like, there's many white guys that, you know, can get Chinese girlfriends or dates here, and but some claim they can't, so it's an individual case-by-case basis.
Also, Winston, I mean, we've noticed a lot of cases here where in China, it just seems like, in many cases, the girl is better looking than the guy.
That's another interesting point, is that, you know, every day when me and Ethan go out, you know, to eat or to walk around, we see a very high percentage of mismatched couples, in that the guy seems less attractive than the girl he's with. It's like the guy looks really nerdy and dorky and sometimes even short, yet he's with a really attractive, hot girl, you know, who's tall, thin, and really sexy looking and flashy looking sometimes, and those guys in America would not be able to get any dates at all. I mean, yet in China, they're dating hot girls. And it's not, and you see it everywhere, too. It's, I swear. I mean,
And it's not because it's of money, because, I mean, often we see these couples in subways, you know, taking the train, subway.
Yeah, they don't even look rich. Some of them look like poor college students.
Or, yeah, eating it very simple.
Yeah, and in America, you'd see the opposite. You would see average-looking women with handsome men that are more attractive than they are. So it's the exact inverse of what you'd get in America. And this speaks volumes. That China is much more pro-male, whereas America is more anti-male and pro-women. So men have much better choices in China and are treated better. And, I mean, the women in China just don't seem to be as hung up on looks as in America. So there's a huge major difference here. Do you want to add anything, Andrew? Or?
Yeah, well, of course, I don't want to be cynical and... just, of course, there are cases where these women, these, like, younger and more attractive women are with these, like, older, less attractive men for financial reasons, but I read on Baidu, you know, the Chinese search engine, I read an article on Baidu which talks about a survey they did, like, they interviewed about... like 10,000 Chinese women and what they value the most in a man. And for a Chinese woman, it seems that a man's physical attractiveness is actually ranked pretty low compared to like some other things. So Chinese women, and I've also found that although my relationship with Megan didn't go well, even she didn't, like, I've also, like, found that, like, Chinese women are, like, they tend to be, like, not very judgmental about a man's appearance, about, like, how a man presents himself and the way he dresses, and whereas, like, Western women, and even, like, as Ian knows, like, Singaporean women, and which I think can basically be considered Western women, they tend to be like much more picky and judgmental, like on the way you look, on the way like a man looks. But Chinese women, mainland Chinese women, it seems to me that they care a lot less. So it shows that they value a man's inner qualities much higher than like a man's like outward attractiveness, a man's outward appearance.
Yeah, I mean, that isn't to say that looks don't matter at all. I mean, if you're an attractive, in-shape guy, obviously you're going to have more dating options here still on the whole. But I think a lot of other factors come into play as well. Like I think over here, looks only get you so far as a guy. You know, they matter far more in a woman than they do in a man. So, you know, even if you're a good-looking guy, there's still many things that... I mean, you have to show that you're, you know, a decent, responsible, reliable guy as well, that you know, you have a good character. I mean, your personality matters a lot with women over here, I think. It's because, as I said as well, because they're looking for long-term relationships, they're dating with a view to marriage, they're not looking for short-term flings on the whole.
Yeah, and, you know, another amazing thing I've noticed about China is that almost all the women are very feminine. I mean, they look feminine, they act feminine, they have a feminine personality, their voice is feminine, their clothes are feminine. I mean, everything about them is just super feminine. And it almost, you know, and this applies to almost all of them. I mean, it's very rare to see a masculine woman in China, whereas in America, in modern America, almost every woman is masculine nowadays. And, you know, which is just so perverted and upside down. So that's a huge difference. And not only are the women in China feminine, but the majority of them, at least half, are very down to earth too, which means it's easy to talk to them, to connect with them, to start a conversation with them, to vibe with them, and to make friends with them or date them. And, you know, it's such a huge, refreshing difference. And if more men in America knew about this, you know, they'd be... I mean, it could change lives, and they'd be like, holy smokes, why didn't I know about this earlier? Why didn't anyone tell me about this? I mean, it's a huge life-changing secret, you know, because men naturally like feminine women. They don't like masculine women, and the Western media refuses to discuss this or acknowledge that fact. So So that's a huge difference. I mean, in America, you'll never see a woman that's attractive, feminine, and down to earth. I mean, that's a combination that's very common in China. Probably the majority of Chinese women are good looking, feminine, and down to earth. But in America, that's more rare than a needle in a haystack. You probably have to get a time machine and go back to the 1970s, the 1960s, to find feminine women that are down to earth. But in China, they're the majority. They're the vast majority. Yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't realize how down to earth the women are here until they actually come here. I mean, if you recall, there've been many cases of us cold approaching women and actually going out with them on the same day. I mean, like basically on the spot, inviting them out for dinner or for drinks, and them coming with us, you know, and from there we just make friends and, you know, things progress from there. So
I was told that Chinese women weren't that approachable before I came, but and that they were too shy and introverted, but. And, you know, that was only partially correct. I mean, it is true that they are kind of shy, you know, and not used to just chatting up strangers. But, you know, that's only partially true because a lot of them actually are. I mean, they're very, I don't know if the word open is appropriate, but they're just very down to earth and genuine. And it's easy to connect with them if you are down to earth and genuine, too. So... because Chinese culture is still very down to earth. It's not like American culture where it's very fake and arrogant and toxic, you know, which is why a down to earth person like me doesn't fit into America, because in order to fit into a fake culture, you have to be fake. And if you're not, then you're seen as weak or outdated, because the only down to earth people in America are people that grew up in the 50s or the 60s. So being down to earth and genuine and easygoing is seen as outdated, like you're too old-fashioned, because the new modern person in America is cold and soulless and emotionless and acts very fake and arrogant, which you can see in movies and TV shows too. Because if you look at the movies and TV shows in the 60s and the 70s, I mean, the people looked more wholesome and down-to-earth, and the women looked more feminine. All the way up to the early 1980s, I mean, the last time I remember women being feminine in America was probably the early 1980s, 82 or 83, and before that, of course. So, that's a huge difference.
Yeah, and actually, Winston, maybe you could share as well on the differences between your social life in Taiwan and China now, because you spent quite a few years in Taiwan as well.
I thought that China would just be a bigger version of Taiwan, but it's totally different. I mean, the people may look similar, but the vibe is different, the body language is different. I mean, Taiwan just feels more uptight and more cliquish, and just, I mean, the energy just doesn't flow. I mean, I don't know, people just don't seem interested to hang out or to go out or to meet me or to socialize with me, whereas in China, I mean, you meet so many people that eventually some of them will become close friends or dates or even girlfriends, and you know, and you'll get invited to more parties and get-togethers. Like when I was in a hostel in Chengdu, I mean, there was like a Valentine's Day party, and you know, they invited me, and I met a lot of people there, and we all had a potluck party, and then after that we went to KTV, and then we went to this outdoor barbecue and stayed out till like 3 a.m. I felt very inclusive into like a group there, and they were all strangers too, so there's more of this instant familiarity vibe between strangers, because China still has a natural social connection. I mean, some of it is becoming modernized and materialistic, yes, but it still has elements of social connection and authenticity.
Yeah, I mean, in the few months you've been here, Winston, I mean, you must have at least 100 to 200 different girls on your WeChat list. I mean, you met so many new people and, you know, gotten to know so many new girls. I mean, how does that compare to your list in Taiwan, you know, for instance?
In Taiwan I hardly meet anyone, and if I do, I mean, it just becomes like an acquaintance, you know. So, yeah, there's a huge difference than in Taiwan. My social life is pretty bad in Taiwan, you know, and I wasn't really happy in Taiwan, to be honest. I just didn't feel like I clicked there, and I didn't get a positive vibe from people. So I've never understood why on the internet most people say that Taiwan is a wonderful, friendly place, because I just don't experience that, or I don't know, maybe I'm being too honest, or I just, you know, just don't have the personality that fits in. But I've heard that Taiwan is probably better for Western white guys, whereas Asian Americans tend to have more fun in China. Our friend Z-Boy said the same thing, and he had the same experiences. So I'm not the only one that doesn't find Taiwan to be very social, a very social place. Yeah, Z-Boy experienced the same, and Andrew experienced the same too. Is there anything you want to add, Andrew? Or?
Yeah. It seems to me that, well, first of all, about China, so many people don't realize that China is an extremely diverse place. Like, the differences between provinces are greater than the differences between, like, different countries in the Anglosphere. Because the Anglosphere, the main Anglophone countries, which are Canada, America, Britain, Australia, and New Zealand, they can pretty much be considered as like one country, a single entity, like spread out across the world. But in China, like the dialect from one province to the next can be like so different that they're like just like totally unintelligible when like two people who speak like different dialects when they like are trying to speak to each other. And also, China's such a diverse place. Whereas Taiwan and Hong Kong and like these.
So they're much more homogenous, you mean?
You can see, I'd even go as far as saying that mainland Chinese and Taiwanese, they don't always look the same. I'm not saying that, like, ethnically, genetically, they're basically the same, but it's due to the different environment. It's due to, like, the different societies that... give the people a different look, because who you are on the inside, like your inner content, is reflected to quite a great extent by the way you look, by your like physical appearance. And because Taiwanese people, they sort of like give me a more like I get a more like empty, soulless vibe from them, from the way they look. And of course, you mentioned American women. American women, regardless of their ethnicity, they all give me this. They all have this extremely fake, this extremely plastic look that just like puts me off. Whereas mainland Chinese women, they look a lot more real. They look a lot more genuine. They're much more down to earth, effeminate, and they are.
Yeah,
and it's reflected by the vibe they give off.
And you can also see it in
a much better vibe than Western women.
Yeah, sorry. I was going to add. Yeah, you can also see it in the way they dress, and you know the fact that they don't use much makeup. I mean, a lot of Chinese women don't really use much makeup on a daily basis. I don't think they need it because there's so many naturally beautiful women over here. And you know they all dress very simply and unpretentiously, in general they're not obsessed with brand name clothing. They're not obsessed with luxury over here. Yeah, maybe a small percentage of women are materialistic. But
I can't hear you guys clearly. Maybe it's due to your internet connection.
Maybe you should pause it.
Oh,
it's due to the distance.
Yeah. Well, can you hear me now? Or?
Hello.
Yeah, I can hear you fine. Even if you don't hear us, it's still getting recorded into the podcast.
Oh, sorry.
You can just talk about something else if you don't hear us. Can you hear me now or?
Good. Mm-hmm.
Can you hear us now, Andrew?
Not very well.
I think it's best.
Okay, just wait a few. Just wait a few minutes. Maybe it'll get better. But yeah, Ethan was just making some supplemental points. And I agree with you that even though Taiwan and Hong Kong and China share the same genetics, that that the body language and the vibe are completely different. So that's why they seem different. Yeah, that's a really good point. Can you hear us better now? Or
hello?
Yeah, can you hear us better now? Or
restart the Skype call. That usually helps.
Andrew, can you hear us?
I can, but not very well.
It's lagging and it's not clear, so you should just try restarting.
Okay, hold on. Let me just hang up and call you back then.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, can you hear us now?
Yes, I can.
It's loud and clear?
Okay, hope it lasts.
Okay, cool. Anyways, what were you last saying, Ethan?
Oh no, I was talking about how you know, you can even see it in the way the women dress here and the fact that they don't wear much makeup in general, that you know they look more down to earth and approachable, and they're just comfortable with being themselves. They don't see this need to create this false image, or you know, be something they're not, or you know, be something that the media or the pop industry tells them to be, or advertising tells them to be, you know. And they're not obsessed with all these brand name clothings and international luxury brands, not at the same level that, you know, girls from developed Northeast Asia are in these other more commercialized and materialistic countries. In China, you still see, you know, that a lot more women are down to earth and practical in that sense. They know it's a waste of money to spend too much on all these unnecessary things that you don't really need. So yeah, I definitely noticed that. I mean, that's for me one of the biggest differences between women in mainland China and women in Singapore.
Yeah, and remember, we're talking relative here. It's all relative and comparative. Yeah. So you know, it's relative to women in like Western countries or in first world Asian countries like Taiwan or Singapore or Hong Kong. So yeah, it's all relative and comparative, and yeah, the differences do exist, but it's very taboo to talk about them, even in the alternative media. I mean, because, yeah, the only problems that exist in the media are politics, economics, and conspiracies, but when it comes to social issues, it's a much bigger taboo, especially if you're talking about differences between races and genders and cultures in terms of the people. It's just not politically correct to talk about any of this. And are you hearing us okay now, Andrew? Or?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Okay.
And yeah, mainland. Yeah, one of the things I really like about mainland Chinese women is that they tend not to wear makeup they just wear very light makeup. Even women in like other Northeast Asian countries like Japan and Korea, the women tend to wear quite heavy makeup. I heard in those countries, it's considered rude for a woman to appear in public without makeup. You don't get that in China. In China, it's perfectly okay for women to appear in public, for women to not wear makeup. And
yeah,
of course, in Western countries and like in Singapore, it's also the norm for women to like spend a lot of time doing makeup, and it just makes them look a lot less authentic, and it makes them like a lot more superficial. And even if they look if you're a woman and you're just plain unattractive, wearing makeup is not going to help. And plus, there's in so many chemicals in beauty products that ultimately have an extremely detrimental effect on like the quality of your skin and like just the overall way you look. So yeah, I really like the fact that mainland Chinese women tend not to wear makeup or just wear very light makeup.
And not only that, but you know, the amazing thing about another amazing thing about them is that mainland Chinese women are very health conscious and wise about having good habits. For example, I mean, almost all the Chinese women I know in China
tell me that I need to sleep early and wake up early to, for better health, and also to eat lunch on time, because they know that, you know, sleeping early and rising early in accordance with the cycle of the sun, and eating on time and regular meals is healthier, and it'll bring you better health, give you longer life. And so that's probably one reason why Chinese women age a lot better than white women or Filipino women or even Russian women, because they're more health conscious. And also it may be because genetically Chinese women just age better too, so that's probably a factor as well. But so yeah, they're it's good that they're wise and health conscious too. And so it's like they're
going up and down again.
Okay, well, yeah, if you don't hear everything I say,
going up and down again.
Okay, well, if you don't hear everything I say, that's fine. We'll just go on to another topic.
The distance, we're just too far
from each other. Yeah, that's okay. You don't need to hear everything I say. If you don't hear everything I say, we'll just talk about something else, or just wait for the connection to get better. Can you hear me now?
Hello? I can't hear you very well.
Okay, what about now? Yeah, so I was just saying that.
I can't hear you very well.
Yeah, don't worry about it. We'll just wait for the connection to get better.
It's better. Now it's better.
Okay, yeah, if you can't hear me, just wait a while. And it's okay if you don't hear everything I say, because we'll just talk about something else if you don't catch everything I say. As long as it's recorded, that's fine. So yeah, I was just saying that Chinese women are a really good package in that, you know, they're wise, they're attractive, they're feminine, and they're down to earth, and so they have really good inner qualities and outer qualities, and so that's an, you know, amazingly ideal package.
Yeah, and I like to say also that I think a lot of people in neighboring countries, or you know, just basically other countries, other developed countries around the world, make the mistake of judging Chinese women. And in many cases, these people have never been to China before. They judge Chinese women by the Chinese women they see in their own countries. But what happens is that, like in places like Japan, Taiwan, Singapore, Hong Kong, and to a smaller extent the U.S., a lot of Chinese women who go to these countries are not really representative of the women that you see in mainland China. Well, in the U.S., you know, a lot of women go there for, you know, maybe as international students, or, you know, for to migrate there as you know, wealthy Chinese who are looking to move out of the country. And in places like Japan and Korea, some foreign members have brought up the fact that the mainland Chinese women that they see there are so, you know, a low class and you know, very rough and unattractive compared to the local girls, the local Japanese girls that they see, for instance. I mean, but this is a very unfair comparison because, like, say, with my experience in Singapore, I mean, a lot of the Chinese, mainland Chinese women who are in Singapore are not, I mean, they go there as blue-collar workers, you know, as cleaners, as women who are working in the sex industry, you know, as... you know, girls who are working in massage parlors and stuff. So, I mean, these women are obviously not going to be, you know, like your average mainland Chinese women. These women are going to be, you know, not very well educated. In many cases, women who are working in the sex industry are money obsessed. They do anything for money, you know. So, I mean, you know, they post, at times maybe they break up marriages or they break up relationships in these countries. And so, you know, they give themselves a bad name. But or they become mistresses of rich men, you know. But, you know, I mean, this is a very unfair way to judge a country. You can't judge a country by its whores or even its blue-collar workers. You know, you have to really understand what the average person in China is like. You have to come to mainland China and, you know, live here and meet the everyday people, you know, and meet all these the college-educated women over here. They're very different from you know, what you may... what your impression of them may be outside of China. So I think that's an important point as well.
Yeah, and that's a great point, because in America, I mean, usually the Asian American women you see are either going to be really nerdy and
Very quiet and shy, with no social skills, and very cliquish too. They only talk to other Asian Americans of their own race, or they're really snobby and arrogant, you know, like the American girls are. So, neither of those are very representative of China, because in China, I mean, the majority of women don't look nerdy or at all. I mean, they look very attractive. They look like almost like models, and some look very cute and some are very sexy too. I mean, China has like over 1 billion people, so you're gonna get a lot of different types. And I would say like maybe 70 or 80% of the women I see in China are very attractive, whereas in America, the Chinese women you see tend to be less attractive than the ones in China. So what you see in America is not representative of what of the Chinese women in China at all and stuff.
Yeah, I think in China you probably see more. There are probably more attractive women than men here. So there is a surplus of attractive women, and there are not enough attractive men to go around dating all these women. So, I mean, that's part of the reason why you see a lot of mismatched couples as well, because there are just not that many good-looking guys around compared to the number of good-looking women.
Yeah. Are you still hearing us, okay, Andrew? Or?
I can't hear you guys very well.
Oh, okay. Is it that my voice has a very low volume to you, or you're just not hearing all the words, or like fading in and out?
I'm not hearing all the words. I hear bits, but not everything.
Yeah, we're just saying that the Chinese women in overseas countries, like in Western countries, don't represent the majority of women in China. That's what we were talking about.
Uh-huh.
So they're not representative. So you can't base your impressions of Chinese women on the Chinese women you see in Canada, for instance.
Yeah.
So why don't we talk about another subject now, about the freedoms you have in China that you don't have in the West. Because I remember in the WeChat group, you and some of the girls were talking about how in China you have certain freedoms that you don't have in the West, such as...
What?
Yeah, can you hear us?
What?
Yeah, like you mentioned how in China you have freedom to sell stuff,
yes,
on the street.
Freedoms in China, right.
Like you can sell
freedoms.
Stuff on the street without a permit.
Yes, the freedoms that you don't have in the West. The West, they have this concept, they have this idea of some like mandatory freedoms for every country. Just to list a few, they are the freedom of speech, the freedom to vote, the freedom of the press, and the freedom of the internet, and yeah, these things that the West sees are like mandatory for every country. The West is really like, first of all, when it comes to freedom of speech, In China, I find that I have a lot more of it than I do in the West. Because in China, as long as you don't openly criticize the government, and like many people, they like comment on government policies behind closed doors. As long as you don't make any open public criticism of the government, no one really cares what you say, and I find people in China to actually be much more tolerant of, like, different ideas. They're much less dogmatic than people in the West. The feeling I get when I'm communicating with someone in the West, when I'm talking with someone in the West, is that it's not... I'm just unable to have a very honest, a very deep, and meaningful and honest conversation. It always feels like a competition. It always feels that there is this like an invisible wall, that there's this like unspoken rule that's not written in any book, but it's just there, and everything's just so politically correct. for example, like, in the West, so let's say if I'm discussing, if I want to discuss a more controversial topic like homosexual, like gay marriage, which I don't agree with. If I, in China, which the majority of people would actually agree with me that gay marriage should not be allowed, I can just say it's wrong. It's just plain wrong. I don't like it. In the West, because it's so politically correct, since like homosexuality has become such a politically correct thing in the West, even if the person that I'm trying to express these like opinions to, even if the other person deep down agrees with me, he's still like, you know, he's still pressured to like not hold such a firm view and like give credit to the opposing perspective, because in the West you're taught that it's not good to have very firm, one-sided personal opinions. You always have to like give credit to the other side. So he would probably say something like, "Well, you know, personally, I'm not a fan of it, but you know, we should just let people make their own choices, and we should just respect their choices." Yeah, so that's one thing. And, well, the freedom to vote, in the West you have this illusion of democracy. You have this illusion that voting actually makes a difference, but in the end it doesn't make a difference at all, because the West is run by these corporal elites, and the government, as Ian said, once said, is just like a middle-level manager, that are basically just a tool of the elite. So in the end, your vote doesn't make a difference at all, because whoever the elite wants elected, whoever best serves their agenda, will get elected regardless of the votes. But regardless of like how many votes or whatever. But you're given this illusion of democracy. You're given this illusion that your opinion actually makes a difference. And freedom of the internet, freedom of the press, I don't think that exists anywhere, because in order for the elite to stay in power, they always have to control what people can know and cannot know, and should not know. So it's always in their to their benefit. It's always in their interests to control the media and the internet, whatever form it may be. So to get to my point, in China there are so many like everyday freedoms that you'll never get in the West. For example, in China, I see like so many people like that sell whatever they're selling, whether it's food or something else. They just like sell whatever they're selling on the street. Whereas in the West, you need a license to do all that. It's just so stupid. And like in China, it's much easier to like run a small business, because you don't have to go through all of these like. You don't have to go through all of these like stages like to get all the proper certificates, all the licenses, all the permits.
Yeah, and it keeps prices down too.
Yeah. I'd like to add as well, for small businesses, what's important is that a lot of people here can actually use their personal bank accounts to do business. So they don't actually have, if it's a small business, in many cases, people don't actually have to register a business, set it up and declare your revenues and profits to the government. You don't, you know, in many cases, if the business is not, you know, extremely large, they do it using their personal bank account. So, you know, and in many cases, because it's done through a personal account, a lot of it's not taxable. So, you know, in this sense, China allows a lot of these small-time entrepreneurs to do their own business without actually really being taxed. You know, that's something that, you know, people outside China may not be aware of. Another example also of freedom in China that I'd like to give is that foreigners like us can actually set up a bank account in any city in China with only a passport and a mobile phone number. You know, so basically you don't have to prove, you don't have to be living in the country long term to set up a bank account, and you don't have to prove that you're living long term. Even the address that you give them can be your hotel address. You know, you don't need a residential address, and they aren't going to verify that address. They aren't going to check that it's definitely where you're staying at. You know, all you need is your mobile number and really your passport. So, you know, anyone can set up an account here and transfer money from overseas to China. There are restrictions on how much foreign currency you can transfer into China per year, unless you have some special circumstances, like say you're starting a business or you're buying property in China. But that's another issue altogether. But yeah, with regards to daily life over here, you know, how do people live over here? A lot of small businesses can get by without paying any taxes, can, you know, get by using personal bank accounts. So that's a very interesting aspect of social freedom that people don't, I mean, outside may not realize.
Yeah, so even I can open a bank account China. Wow, yeah. That's amazing. I mean, in the U.S., they would have a lot more barriers and identification checks to open a bank. And you made a really good point, Andrew, that because about selling stuff on the street, because the streets are supposed to belong to the people.
Yeah.
And whereas in America, everything is privatized, so, you know, nothing is shared or belongs to everyone. So, and, you know, a lot of people need to make a living by selling stuff on the street, in the night market, or, you know, in a stall on the street corner. And so it's their livelihood. It's how they make a living. And so if they can't do that, they can't make a living because they might not have skills to get some corporate job or something. So it's very important for people to be able to start a small business and make a living, and, you know, and if they can do that, it keeps prices down because they don't have to buy an expensive license fee or something.
And pay rent for, you know.
Yeah, you know, or pay rent for you know, having a stall, which, you know, raises prices really high, like in America, where everything is much too expensive. And here, amazingly, most things are a lot cheaper than America. Even though China is fairly modernized, a lot more modernized than I thought, because in the movies it always shows China as being kind of primitive and backward and ancient or something, but China is actually pretty modernized, more than I thought, and very convenient. So so for a very modern country, the prices are still fairly low on lots of things, like food, for instance. You can get meals for like $2 or $3 at cheap restaurants or canteens.
Haircuts as well. I mean,
and a haircut is like, gosh, like $3 or something. Yeah. So I mean, and you don't have to pay a tip either.
Oh, and hotels. So, I mean, you know, the hotels. You can stay in pretty decent hotels in even first tier cities like Shenzhen and Guangzhou, for about like $20 a night or $15 to $20 a night if you're on a budget. You know, and you're staying, you know, for quite a while and you're on a budget. You can stay in decent budget hotels in China for about $15 to $20 a night. I mean, in Singapore, a hotel like that would cost well over $100. So this is a big difference.
Yeah, which is what we've been doing. I mean, we've been staying in these hotels for, you know, $15 a night or sometimes $20, and they're pretty decent. They got everything we need. You know, they're clean, they're comfortable, they got Wi-Fi, and so yeah, you can. I mean, you can live on a lot less than China. So, economically, your purchasing power is much better than China in China than in the U.S. So, you know, that's another benefit. There's an economic benefit too, which is the cost of living. And you know, a few weeks ago, I went in Guangzhou. I went to see the doctor, and it only cost me like $1. And I didn't even have health insurance, and I only had to wait 5 minutes. It only cost me $1 for the consultation with a doctor, and then when I went to get my medicine, it only costed like $6. You know, and so healthcare is extremely cheap here, and I was surprised because in the U.S. it's a ripoff.
And also, you know, recall that you didn't even have to show your ID or anything. You didn't have to verify your identity.
Yeah, I didn't even have to show any identification. I mean, they just got me in really fast. And a friend of ours named Z-Boy on the forum, I mean, he said he had some tonsillitis and needed some treatment for that, and it would have costed him hundreds of dollars in the U.S., but in China it only costed a few dollars to get that treated. So that's a big secret, you know, like healthcare. Like, if you need, you know, an expensive treatment or operation, you can come to a foreign country like China or Taiwan or even Cuba, like Michael Moore showed in his film Sicko, when he compared the healthcare industry in America to other countries. You can go to other countries and get this operation done, and it'll cost you much, much less than in the U.S. And, you know, that's a big secret that could save people's lives. But unfortunately, it's not talked about in America. It's one of the biggest secrets, that you can solve a lot of problems by getting out of America. That's what Happier Abroad is all about. But these truths are suppressed because you're not supposed to know about them.
Yeah.
You're supposed to stay in your own country and believe that America is the world, and you can't leave it because nothing is different overseas and everything is worse overseas.
Yeah.
And you must stay in your own country. So, you know, we're trying to unbrainwash people from assuming that falsely.
Yeah, also I'd like to bring up the fact that public transportation as well is very cheap and convenient in China. I mean, especially in a city like Shenzhen or Guangzhou, the metro, the subway basically goes everywhere all throughout the city. And, you know, there are many different lines, like almost 8 to 10 different lines. In Shanghai, there are like 16 or 17 different lines. In Beijing, Andrew would know better about Beijing, but the subway goes everywhere. It's very cheap. Each subway ride costs like, you know, between 40 cents to a dollar, depending on how far you go. And also the cabs cost very little in China compared to like anywhere, I mean, to the US or even in Singapore. So, like, you know, in over here you can take cabs to places that are, you know, just a few kilometers away, and it would cost mainly only about $2 to $3, you know, US dollars. So yeah, I mean, it's very easy to get around. And not only that, it's if you choose to walking is also very convenient in China, because a lot of the cities here are very pedestrian friendly. You know, you can walk for miles, and you have a lot of stuff to see on the streets. It's not like you're walking on the highway. You know, there's a lot of street life, there are a lot of shops, there's a lot of activity going on in the streets, so there's a lot to see. So if the weather is good and, you know, you need to exercise, you can actually walk long distances within Chinese cities and still be very entertained and you know, still be and enjoy the bustling atmosphere of the city.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, China is very vibrant. I mean, the city has so much to see and do and to explore. I mean, it's amazing. You can see something every day, even in the same city, see something new every day. And it's, I mean, I remember Russia was like that too. The first time I went there, all the city was exciting and dynamic and vibrant, and there was so much to see and do everywhere. Whereas in America, most people live in these suburbs, and they're so boring. I mean, there's nothing to do but go to strip malls and Walmart, and there's no vibrancy, there's nothing to do. I mean, life is just so dull in the U.S. I can't imagine why so many Asians want to go there. It boggles the mind. It's baffling. Yeah, and the public transportation in China is really good, just like it is in most developed countries. You don't need a car. You can just walk everywhere, and it gives you more exercise. And it's healthy. It's better for your health too, and the food tastes more natural and healthy too. So when you eat here, if you eat normal meals here, you actually will lose weight if you're coming from America, which, you know, our friend Z-Boy said too, that just eating normal meals, you don't even have to eat less. If you just eat normal healthy meals in China, even though they're cheap, they're still healthy, so you'll lose weight naturally. And that's another big secret that the American nutrition industry doesn't want you to know, because there's no profit in letting you know stuff like this. So, but we'll tell you, because we are truth seekers and we care more about the truth than about making profit off of things. So,
yeah, I mean, most people who come from America, I mean, most Americans really who come to China tend to lose weight, you know, whereas a lot of Chinese who go to America to study or to migrate there put on weight, you know. And when I was studying in the U.S., when I attended a university in the U.S., I noticed that as well. Like, a lot of international students from Asia were putting on weights in America. You know, whereas, like, now, if, you know, a lot of us, after coming to China, well, I mean, a lot of Americans lose a lot of weight, you know. So, and like, Z-Boy, for instance, I met him, like, a year ago in China, and I've also met him recently, and between then and now, he must have lost at least, like, 4 or 5 kilos, and, he looks in really good shape now, you know. So, I think on the whole, I mean, China, the lifestyle here is a lot healthier as well, socially and also physically and socially as well, emotionally as well.
Yeah. Andrew, are you still able to hear us?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah, and you made a great point earlier that that in China you have more social freedom. Like, I have more freedom to go out and meet people and to talk to girls and to date girls, whereas in America you're not allowed to talk to strangers unless it's for business reasons. You're expected to leave people alone and to mind your own business, and so you can't really meet people, and it's almost impossible to make any real normal friends in America. So China is free socially in a lot of ways. There's more social freedom in China, even if there's not as many political freedoms as like America has. So that's a very bottom line key point, is that China has more social freedoms. And plus, you can, I mean, you might not be able to criticize the government openly, but you can criticize like social issues, or criticize liberalism, or talk about racial differences or gender differences. Whereas in the U.S., if you criticize liberalism or spoke out against multiculturalism or feminism or gay rights or and stuff like that, I mean, you could probably lose a lot of your friends, and you may even lose your job if you do that in America, because that's just taboo. It's just not allowed. You are not socially free in America, and you're not free to criticize any liberalism or feminism or multiculturalism, because it contains a lot of destructive ideas that are just plain wrong and go against human nature, which is another topic, of course, but you're not allowed to be anti-liberal in America.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a huge taboo on that. Whereas in most other countries, you can talk about those things freely. I mean, you can criticize, like here in China, I can talk about the differences between men and women, the obvious differences that everyone knows, and almost nobody will dispute it because they're obvious, they're natural, they're self-evident. Whereas you can't in the politically correct West.
Yeah, and I think. Another point about freedom in China is that, I mean, I don't know how much this matters to some of you guys out there, but interestingly, here, even there is no, actually, there's no formal age restriction on buying alcohol. Like even kids and teenagers can buy alcohol. You know, as we all know, in the U.S., the age limit, the minimum age is 21, and in many other countries like Singapore, the minimum age is 18, and they do actually often check your ID. In China, they never check your ID because there is no age requirement.
Oh, so anybody can buy or drink alcohol? I mean, even a teenager or children? I mean,
yeah. Not if you're driving, obviously, but yeah, if you're just buying it for consumption on the streets or, you know, at home, it's no problem.
And you can walk outside with one too?
Yeah, you can freely walk in public and drink, or you can, you know, bring it to the park, or you can bring a bottle of wine to the sea or to the river, to the park to drink, you know, no problem at all. I mean, there are no restrictions against that. You know, people basically, the social atmosphere is that, like, just do anything you want, just don't get out of hand, but otherwise, you know, you're free to do anything you want. You know, people just let you be. You know, there is this kind of laissez-faire attitude towards social freedom over here.
Yeah, there's more common sense. And so in Singapore, you can't, there's restrictions too on alcohol, and
yeah,
you can't
walk
around with a beer bottle, or
not beyond a certain time. In the US, you can't do it at all day long, but in Singapore, you can't do it past 10 p.m. or something like that now. So, so it's pretty restrictive as well over there. And also another point that we could talk about also is the fact that, you know, remember how, I mean, near our hotel there's this big square where, you know, at night often you see a lot of people dancing on the streets, you know, in on the square at night. So, I mean, you would see like a large group of like easily at least 100 people. You know, members, just average members of the public, freely dancing in public in China. And this is not something...
Yeah, I've seen that a lot. Not only in the public park, but in these courtyards next to the mall or city center, you see all these people dancing, and there's free dance lessons, free salsa dancing lessons. And we took some pictures and sent them out to the group. And yeah, and you can get these free dance lessons and even dance with some random girls sometimes. And there's not just old people, there's young people there too. And they just seem not so uptight about it. Like, you could just, you know, dance in public like that. And, yeah. Yeah, in America, you'd never really see that because people are too uptight for that.
Yeah.
You know, unless you went to some expensive place in Hawaii where you have to pay to have a good time, maybe. But, yeah, you don't see people that loose, I mean, that open about dancing on the streets in America.
Yeah, I mean,
it's too uptight.
In Singapore, that would be considered an illegal public gathering. You know, to have so many people gather together to dance, you need a license or special permit, or it'll need to be some special event. It can't be an everyday affair like it is over here. You know, this is another aspect of social freedom that people don't really know about. But yeah, you know, China people use common sense. Also, like, say, like, if okay, let's say if you were eating at a certain restaurant, they didn't have a certain type of food that you want to eat, or a certain drink, or you know, even they didn't sell alcohol. You could technically, in China, you could go to the store nearby to buy the drinks you need, or another restaurant nearby to buy the food you want, bring them into the restaurant you were originally dining at, and consume them there, and the people at the restaurant will be completely fine with it. You know, to them, that's a very normal, acceptable thing. If I did that in Singapore, and I think the same in America, right, it would be considered rude and unacceptable in many cases. Like, you know, you can't bring, you know, food and drinks from outside into that establishment, you know. So, yeah, I mean, that's again another example of how people have so much more common sense and so much more easygoing about these kind of things over here.
Yeah. Did you want to add anything, Andrew?
Yeah, what Ian said, like, in China, you can just buy alcohol. Like, they sell alcohol, like, in pretty much everywhere, and you don't need to show your ID. They don't have, like, those, like, specialized liquor stores in China. You can just buy alcohol from a regular, like, convenience store. And, yeah, I especially don't like it in the West that you need to show your ID for pretty much everything. Like, even when I go to the theater, even when I go to the movie theater, like, sometimes they ask me for my ID just to buy some movie tickets. And one time I experienced that, and I was very pissed. I just showed the staff, like, I just showed the people in the movie theater, working in the movie theater, how pissed I was, and they gave me a very strange look. They gave me that a very bad look, and they were like, "Why are you even complaining? Like, it's the rules. You just have to follow the rules." I don't get these kinds of, like, stupid rules in China. In China, I can just, like, do whatever I want, pretty much do whatever I want.
Yeah, and all this is shocking because the popular perception in the West is that China is not a free country. It has no freedom because there's too much government control, whereas in America, they call themselves the land of the free, which, I mean, even most Americans don't believe that anymore, but there's still that label they put on themselves, even though it's way outdated. I mean, it might have been true a long time ago, but definitely not today, because America has the highest number of laws in the world and is the most controlling and the most bullying, too. So this is a shock because the public perception is that the West has more freedom than America, I mean, than China. But in reality, what we experience on an everyday basis is the opposite, because we experience a lot more personal everyday freedoms that you don't get in the West, especially in America and Canada, that you do in China. So this goes against the popular perception of China having no freedom or little freedom.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
There's a feeling that there, you get the feeling here when you're in public that the public owns the public space. You know, it's not the government or multinational corporations or the rich elite that owns the public space. The public space belongs to the people, so they're free to dance on it. They're free to sell stuff on it. They set up stall and sell stuff on it. You know, and even like, okay, let's say, I mean, you're also like, let's say, okay, there are times you're walking in public and, you know, you're looking for, you need to go to the bathroom, right? And there's no public bathroom nearby. Technically speaking, you can just go into any restaurant, any, you know, any simple restaurant on the street and ask, you don't even have to ask them, just walk into their bathroom and use the toilet there. In the West, that would be considered unacceptable if you're not a patron of that restaurant, you know. But over here, again, they use common sense. They're pretty easygoing about these kind of things. So, you know, I feel a lot more free here than I did in Singapore or in America.
Yeah, and another way that China is more free is that I can be more honest in China. For example, you know, in America, for example, if somebody asks you, how are you, you always have to say, I'm doing great, even if you're not. So there's this force, the culture forces you to lie, to put up this facade that you're always great and happy 24 hours a day, even though it's impossible to be that way, because life has up and down cycles. What comes up must come down. So life is a cycle of up and down, and in America, you can't acknowledge reality. You have to, because Americans tend to be the most delusional people on the planet, so they have to put up this facade that everything is great on the up cycle 24 hours a day, when reality is not like that. So they deny reality. So the culture forces you to lie and to be dishonest and pretend to be great when you're not. So you don't have this freedom to be honest in America, whereas in China, you have this. You have freedom to be honest. I don't have to say I'm great if someone asks me, how are you in China? I can be honest. If I'm not doing great, I can be honest about that. And that's the way it is in most countries. In fact, in Poland, when I was in Poland, they said that in the Polish language, there's no phrase for how are you, because the question is meaningless. It doesn't make any sense. It's not specific. In America, when someone asks, how are you, it's kind of like to force you to be optimistic and positive and say that you're doing great. It's just a way to force someone to say that they're doing great. It doesn't mean anything. You know, and so I hate having to lie every day in America and say that I'm doing great, especially in a toxic environment that American culture is, which is so socially disconnected that, you know, it's just boring because there's no social connection in America. Whereas in China, you do still feel a sense of social harmony, social connection.
Yeah, you know, you get this feeling in America that I guess a lot of people stay with each other, or a lot of roommates don't really get along with each other, and there seems to be all this tension and all these, you know, politics.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up, bring up that point too, which is that, you see all this group harmony in China and in Asia in general. For example, if you see a group of friends in China, especially a group of girls, they all get along harmoniously. They don't argue or compete or have a battle of egos. Whereas in America, a group of friends tends to have no harmony. They tend to compete with the ego, and they each have to show off that they're better and good and be competitive. It's too competitive in America, so everyone is in this competition mode, and there's no harmony. And so another example is like, in America, when people have a roommate, when they share an apartment with a roommate, they always have a negative experience. They always say it's a roommate from hell story, because people don't get along with other people in America. Whereas in China, when someone has a roommate, they usually always, most of the time, they get along with that roommate really well.
Yeah.
Because there's a natural harmony between people that you don't have in America.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you see, even here, I mean, you see many cases of people even staying with their colleagues, you know, because it's the convenient option. And even then, you know, a lot of the colleagues become close personal friends. You know, it's not like, you know, elsewhere. Like, my experience in Singapore is that generally you don't really become close friends with your colleagues because there's all this tension, there's office politics that you deal with, and you can't really fully trust them, you know. Whereas over here, I feel like people put personal relationships before careers, before their jobs. So, you know, When they are friends with their colleagues, their relationships with their colleagues are such that we are friends first and foremost, and you know, secondarily we're also colleagues. So I don't get that vibe in Singapore. I think it is the same in America. You know, where it seems like work comes before everything else, and that, you know, colleagues can be quite cold and overly professional towards each other, and you know, there isn't that personal feel in their interaction with each other, you know.
Yeah, I mean, as you know, in America, it's really hard to get along with people. I mean, everyone is egotistical, arrogant, and toxic, and there's all this friction between people, and you just cannot relax or be yourself the way you can in Asia, where people are more humble and modest and down-to-earth. So when people are humble and modest, it's easier to get along with people than if they're arrogant and narcissistic or egotistic.
Yeah, and also what I find about America, I think Andrew and I have discussed this before as well, is that a lot of people there don't really have a concept of lasting and true friendship. I mean, a lot of them are just friends for different phases in their lives, but once that phase of their life is over, they move on and they find a new group of friends, you know. Whereas I get the feeling I have in China is that a lot of people here, once they're friends, they tend to be friends for lives, you know, for life. I feel like in America, maybe people are too competitive, too alienated from each other, too individualistic, that their relationships with each other aren't very personal. And, you know, in many cases, friendships don't last. So, but I think Andrew has a lot more to say about that, about, you know, friendships and relationships in the West. Because you've talked to me about that a lot before. Andrew, maybe you want to share?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, well, so basically, people in the West, they come across as very polite, even if you're a stranger, even if you're a total stranger. But as I've discussed with Ian, that this politeness is just superficial. That deep down, they're very cold and they're very aloof, and they have such a strong sense of privacy. Like in the West, the norm is to be paranoid. The norm is to not reveal too much about yourself. The norm is not to have these extremely close, these extremely honest conversations. And the Western concept of friendship, it's basically just a bunch of people getting together when they all have time, assuming they even have time, like away from their work, from their careers, to just get together, have some fun, and like gossip a little, and just hang out. But there's nothing like really deep. There's no deeper connection on either a mental or an emotional level. And yeah, one time I read this very interesting blog post by a Chinese blogger, and he compares like friendships in China to friendships in the West. So the comparison he makes goes like this. Friendships in the West, you start with a very low hurdle, but as you keep moving forward, the hurdles become higher and higher until you can't like leap over them anymore, until you're just unable to like leap any further. So basically what he's trying to say is that in the West, when you like get to know someone, at first it seems easy because they're polite, they're approachable, but the more you know them, the more you find that they're just unwilling to reveal their true selves to you. They're unwilling to like reveal too much about themselves to you because of this Western concept of like privacy and like personal space, which it does not exist in China. And he compares like China is the opposite. The person you meet at first, he may not come across as the most polite, he may not always present himself the right way as the West sees it. But once you really get to know that person, you'll find it like much more easier to be communicative with them, and they will also be like much more honest with you. They will also like open up to you. Whereas in the West, the more you get to know a person, the more you find that they simply won't open up to you. They won't, because they value their privacy so much.
Yeah, like I said, there's just no social connection in America and Canada. And so you just feel very lonely and isolated, and existence is very meaningless and empty. And all you have to do is work and consumerism, which does not fill the soul. It does not make people happy, but it, you know, that's all there is to do. So people just look like they're running on fumes. They're
So that's really an important difference, I think, between the West and China. I mean, in economically speaking, I don't know if any of you noticed, but like in China, a lot of people now talk about the fact that in order to take the Chinese economy to the next level, it needs to increase its level of consumption. Therefore, consumption needs to go up in China. Currently, China is too reliant on investment and reliant on exports. They need they want the people to consume more. You know, the powers that be, from both the West and in China itself, they want China to start consuming more. So I think that's the main difference between China and the West. You know, this is in economically speaking, but I think it affects the attitudes and the lives of the people as well. In the West, people are so preoccupied with consumption, and consumerism is such a big part of their lives that it basically takes precedence all over all other aspects of their lives. I mean, they lose the spiritual and emotional aspects of their lives that are actually more important for happiness. You know, in China, you can see that people realize there's more to life than consuming as well, that relationships and community matters more. You know, that's why, you know, they're not big on consuming the way that, you know, the Westerners do. That's why people in China tend to be more frugal. They tend to focus more on relationships. They don't, you know, they save their money and they don't spend too much money on stuff they don't really need, you know.
Yeah, and didn't you say that work is not a religion in China, like in the it is in America?
Yeah, my feeling here in China is that generally people look at work as a means to an end. You know, it's just a way to survive. You know, they don't. It's not something that they worship or they feel, it's the purpose of life itself, you know. Whereas my feeling in developed Northeast Asia and in America is that your career is your life, you know. It's almost
as if...
And
that's true in Singapore too?
Yes, definitely. You know, that corporatism is almost a religion in these countries. Like the sole purpose of your life is to, you know, get a glamorous job at a multinational corporation, you know, earn a high income, you know, and you know, basically, and that will lead to happiness, and that's your sole aim in life. Whereas over here, you know, just like how, as I mentioned earlier, people seem to see their colleagues as friends first and foremost, and colleagues as you know, secondarily, see them as colleagues. Over here, people look at, you know, life and happiness in life as their foremost priority, and maybe you know, providing for their family, their friends, their loved ones. You know, a lot of people work in the cities and send money home as well. You know, this is their, you know, I mean, their main duty is towards their family and their community, not to a corporation. A corporation is just, if they work for one, it's just a means to an end. And also, I think in China, you'll see that a much smaller proportion of the economy is dominated by large corporations and multinational corporations, or even government corporations. There are a lot of small businesses here that are doing okay and they're surviving. You know, a lot of small independent business owners, a lot of young entrepreneurs, especially in Shenzhen, we meet young people who own their businesses all the time. You know, so I mean, people, you know, in many cases, people aspire to start their own small businesses over here, rather than work for some big company. You know, so there isn't that glamorization of MNCs and corporate culture the way there is in many developed countries overseas over here. So, and you know, I'm like that too. I definitely don't vibe with people who, you know, who worship corporate culture. So I feel very at home in China, because that feels like a more natural mindset to have, you know, a more healthy and natural mindset to have.
Yeah, I've always felt like the corporate culture feels more like a prison, like it's oppressive. And you have to put on a fake mask every day. It's a facade. You have to put on the fake mask, and it's not authentic. You can't be yourself when you're a corporate slave. You have to, you know, live for the corporation. And, you know, there's no freedom in that at all. What do you think, Andrew?
Yeah, well, right, like in China, people still take time to enjoy life, and whereas in the West, I don't really see people like enjoying life. And overall, like the overall feeling in China is that people still try to do things just to relax, not necessarily to get some kind of achievement, to get a sense of like personal fulfillment through like constant achievement. But people still do things to relax, and like, I mean, I think even the lives of seniors in China is much more. Seniors in China have much more of a life than like
old people
in the West. Like old people in the West, they go to retirement homes. In China, old people, they still do many things like dancing and going for walks and like practicing Tai Chi in parks.
There are also a lot of old people in the parks playing chess. And the other day when Winston and I went to one of these big parks in Shenzhen, Winston actually challenged one of these old guys to a game of chess, this chess master to a game of chess. And Winston nearly defeated him, although he lost in the end. But but I mean, the point I'm trying to make here is that in general, a lot of old people seem to have a lot of activities, you know, to have a sense of community, to have, you know, they know their neighbors, you know, they're close with their family, you know. The demand for old age homes must be much, much lower here than it is in developed countries around the world. So, you know, old people seem to lead very emotionally and socially healthy lives in China, which is, it's very nice to see.
Yeah, and their relatives take care of them too. I mean, their children, when they grow up, they still take care of them because the family is more close-knit. It's not like in America where you grow up and then you only see your family once a year. The parents and their children are more close-knit and have a closer relationship and keep in touch more and see each other more. And even in Europe, I mean, that's the way it is too. I mean, people still are close to their parents even in adulthood. So, there's not this independence-minded thing here where you have to not need other people and to be happy alone and here, people are interdependent, which is how humans are meant to be. Humans are meant to depend on each other and to be communal and tribal and have a sense of community or family, too. And that's the way it's always been. So needing other people is not a bad thing. It's normal. It's natural. It's human. Whereas in America, it's seen as something bad and dysfunctional and wrong. Because you're not supposed to need other people. You're supposed to be happy alone and independent, which is not true, but, you know, that's what the culture teaches. So, you know, in the West, we've been taught things that go against human nature, that go against reality. And unfortunately, a lot of people fall for it. So I've never understood this notion in America that says that if you're happy alone and you don't need other people and you're independent, then it makes you more attractive to the opposite sex and that women will like you more or love you more if you're happy and don't need them. That's I've never seen the logic of that, but a lot of New Age people and pop psychology people seem to assume that for some reason, whereas I don't see the basis behind that at all. I mean, you know, it just depends on the individual, but you know, if you have really good chemistry and connection with someone, or if a woman really loves you, you know, whether or not you need her is not going to change that. I mean, relationships are, people naturally need each other. Yeah.
In America and Singapore, actually, in developed countries as a whole, there tends to be this mentality that, I mean, there are like dating coaches that tell you, oh, you know, when you date a woman, you have to try to play hard to get, you have to try to play mind games, don't be an open book, don't open your heart up too soon.
Retain a sense of mystery to keep her interested.
Yeah, exactly. Retain a sense of mystery. Don't ask her out on dates too often. You know, sometimes let her do the asking out sometimes, you know, and make her guess where she stands in your mind, you know. So over here, I don't feel a need for that. In fact, I feel that doing that may actually backfire in China. I find that over in China, it's perfectly okay to be honest and direct with the girl, you know, but don't look too desperate, don't overdo it, but, you know, just show that you're sincere and that you're a good guy, You know, just follow your, be yourself and follow your heart. You know, just don't do anything too extreme or out of hand. And that tends to work, you know. I mean, I don't play, when I date women over here, I don't play any mind games. I don't, you know, I don't try to give them the impression that I'm, you know, a very high status guy, or like, I don't feel a need to show them social proof, like they, I guess they call that in the dating, in the PUA industry. There is no need for that. Women don't, in fact, if you overdo that over here, if you play too many mind games, if you, or if you come across as an overly high status guy over here, she may actually think that, you know, she may actually feel she's not compatible with you. She may actually feel alienated from you. Because over here, the women are more down to earth. They don't think of themselves as some unattainable princess, you know, that needs to be spoiled that by all these rich guys. You know, they tend to be, you know, down to earth. So they're looking for a guy who's down to earth like them. So, yeah, over here, I feel like I don't have to play any of these mind games or use any of these PUA techniques when dating women over here. What do you think, Winston?
Well, yeah, I definitely feel like I can connect with women here and hold a normal conversation without having to pretend to be something I'm not. I can just be myself, and that's very liberating. And to me, that's what freedom really means, the freedom to be yourself. Because if you can't be yourself, then you aren't free. You don't have freedom. It doesn't matter what kind of government or political control you have. If you can't be yourself, you have no freedom. And this has nothing to do with government, because Americans have this false notion that freedom is all about government control, when it's not. Freedom is about being able to be yourself, and that has nothing to do with any government control. So to me, that's the most important thing. Hold on a second, let me pause this. I got to answer the door. Hold on. Okay, we're back now.
Yeah.
Anyways, I was saying that, I mean, it's just so easy to connect with people and with, you know, women in general here. I mean, it just feels more relaxed around them and down to earth, and like you can be yourself, and that's very liberating. And it's very important, too, because this is not talked about on any other websites or alternative media. I mean, none of the supposed, you know, like conspiracy sites or David Icke or Alex Jones or all the alternative health websites, you know, all the other people that claim to be truth seekers, they don't talk about this because it's just taboo to talk about differences between people in different countries. But the differences are real, but you're not allowed to talk about them, and even alternative media doesn't talk about them. So it's really a tragedy that stuff like this, which is obvious to us, is not being put out there. And you know, that's why we're doing this podcast, to try to, you know, to try to share all these observations and comparisons to the world, because people have a right to know, you know, the differences between, you know, like China and the West that aren't being shown on TV and are not even being talked about on the radio or even on other websites. And people have a right to know these things so that they can make informed decisions about where they want to live. So someone listening to this might decide that they would be better off in China because the women are more feminine and down to earth, but they'll never hear that on TV or radio or even alternative websites. You know, they'd have to visit Happier Abroad and listen to podcasts like this to know. So we hope to reach those people and let them know that they can be happier in you know, a country like China or maybe Philippines or whatever, which they'll never hear about, and so they don't have to be unhappy and miserable in the West if they don't belong there. You know, it's all about choices and options. We want people to know that they have options and choices, and other media doesn't tell them that. Did you guys want to add anything? Or?
Yeah,
well, I just want to say that, what was I about to say? Make another comment about relationships in America, about relationships in the West and relationships in China. In the West, the two partners in a relationship are seen as fundamentally independent from each other. not dependent on each other. Of course, I'm not saying that there's absolutely no need for personal space in a relationship, but I mean, if two people are in a relationship, they're meant to need each other. They're meant to depend on each other. And that's the way things are in China. But in the West, if you often hear like, my partner is like, you often hear that like clinginess and like dependence on each other in a relationship is not good. That the two people are just like fundamentally different individuals that, you know, just somehow have another person by their side, but, you know, in the end, I'm still myself and you are still yourself. There's no sense of like this unity. There's no sense of this harmony.
Yeah, you know, and I was surprised because this girl I used to date, she actually told me that I should be more clingy and sticky, and that I wasn't being clingy enough. And I was surprised. I was like, "You want me to be clingy?" And she said, "Yeah, because in China, couples are supposed to be clingy. They're supposed to be sticky and codependent." And I said, "Well, I was taught in the West that that's a bad thing." And so she actually told me that it's okay to be clingy in China because they're expected to. It's natural to be clingy. You know, whereas in America, you have to pretend you don't need other people and suppress that. So, you know, I was pretty surprised about that because, you know, I guess a long time ago I might have been more clingy, but, you know, I learned that, you know, that was an evil sin in the West because you're supposed to pretend to not need other people. And yeah, that's a surprising difference. So it means that if you want to be clingy and or if you like girls that are clingy, then you have the freedom to have that in Asia or in China.
I mean, my experience overseas as well has been that, you know, expressing affection or intimacy, it's often looked at as a sign of weakness, you know, as a sign of weakness, especially in a man, you know. But over here, like, it just seems like, you know, girls want you to be romantic. Girls want you to be very affectionate, very expressive of your love. You know, they want you to be mushy. They want you. They like that. You know, if you act cold and independent and hard to get, and you overdo it for too long, the girl's gonna feel alienated from you. And that actually seems like, you know, the way it was supposed to be. I mean, you know, a couple should be able to naturally express their love for each other.
Yeah, I'm surprised. Some girls actually think that if you're not clingy enough, then it's a sign you don't love them, and so they hold that as a negative against you. Whereas in the West, you're supposed to pretend that you don't need them.
Yeah.
So it's the polar opposite.
Yeah.
So that's another amazing inverse between China and like North America, for example. So yeah, I mean, are there any other topics you guys want to talk about, or before we wrap it up? I guess maybe we should cover the topic about whether, like, if you're a Western man listening to this, they might be wondering if they can live in China, and if so, what kind of work they'd have to do. Like, would they have to teach English, or could they do something else? Could they be an editor or a translator, or? And if they wanted to teach English, would they need a teaching degree, like a TEFL degree, to do that? What do you think, Andrew?
Well, right now, the easiest way for a Westerner to make a living in China is still teaching English. For the most part, it's still teaching English. But once they're more settled in China, perhaps they could consider like doing something else, such as becoming a translator, or perhaps even starting their own business. I remember Caleb telling me, Caleb Magnum telling me that he plans to start his own business in China, and Yeah, so I guess teaching English is a start, but once they're more settled, perhaps they could move to something else.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I agree. For most people, most Westerners, teaching English is a great starting point because, okay, all you need is a degree and also, I think, a TEFL cert as well. So, and then you're good, you're basically good to go as far as I know. I mean, I don't teach here, but as far as I know, you know, that's just, you know, those are the basic requirements. And the thing about being an English teacher in China is that you, compared to the cost of living in China, you get paid a pretty decent wage, a wage that would, you know, allow you to live very comfortably in China, you know, a middle class, at least middle class, if not upper middle class kind of salary in China. So, you know, a salary that will allow you to support both yourself and your girlfriend as well, if there's a need for it, you know. So, you know, that's a very good starting point for a Westerner in China. But, yeah, I've seen a lot of people as well who are teachers, who were teachers in China, but then they progress on to do, you know, their own business, or they even open their own English schools. I've seen a bunch of guys who actually opened their own motorcycle store. They actually assemble their own motorcycles and sell it to local Chinese. So, like, I mean, I mean, a bunch of foreign guys. So, I mean, there are a lot of foreigners as well in China who are doing all sorts of entrepreneurial businesses, especially in Guangdong, in Shenzhen and Guangzhou. There's a lot of entrepreneurial activity going on, and Guangdong is the trade capital of China. So there are a lot of business opportunities in import and export as well. So, you know, but a lot of these things take time. You know, you need to understand the ground better, and you need to understand the markets better in China. So, you know, I would say the best thing for a Westerner to do is to start by teaching English, and then, you know, after a few years, see if you can progress onto something else.
Yeah, my impression is that you can teach English without a TEFL degree or an English teaching certificate, but the salary they would give you would probably be smaller. And plus, you'd have to teach at a smaller school, not a bigger one, because the smaller schools may have less competition trying to get their jobs. So they would pay less. That's been my experience. And yeah, I guess the easiest thing to do is to teach English, unless you're lucky enough to get to have a U.S. corporation hire you and then deploy you over in China. So either that, or you can work in some company that needs English-speaking person. But yeah, China is a growing economy. There's a lot of opportunity in business. So it just depends on the individual and your talents and your skills, because everybody's qualifications are different. So it depends on the individual. You just have to do some research and, you know, look for jobs online. And but ultimately, most jobs that are open are not advertised online. They're usually recruited from within the company. So most of the jobs are not even advertised online.
Yeah.
What's advertised online is usually entry-level stuff or stuff where they need a highly skilled person. But, yeah, you just have to do the research and make some connections and network and invest time. I mean, everything takes time, and where there's a will, there's a way. So there's a lot of information out there, and if you research it, you can find a way and, you know, have faith that, you know, if China's right for you, then things will work out eventually. Yeah, so anything you guys want to add? What about the work visa? I mean, do people need a work visa to work in China? And how easy is it for an American to get a tourist visa, too?
Well, to get a work visa in China, to get a work visa, I mean, you need, you know, a company to sponsor you for a work visa. So you need to get employed, and they need to be willing to sponsor you for a work visa. So, I mean, obviously, if you're going to be an English teacher, you know, at say any of the major training schools or the universities, that isn't generally a problem. I mean, that's part of the normal process. Yeah, but if you don't have an official job in China, then it may be more difficult to get a work visa unless you register a business in China, like I have done. So that also makes you eligible for a work visa.
For business owners, the first time you get a work visa, it's for 1 year, but then if you extend your visa from then on, it's 2 years each time. So you get that added benefit as a business owner, you get two-year work visas each time. I think a lot of people who are here, who, you know, looking to do something entrepreneurial, but they're not exactly sure what yet, and they come here either on tourist visas or business visas. I think you can get, depending on the country you're from, obviously, you can get business and tourist visas which last for 1 year, but they require you to exit the country every 60 days or every 90 days. If you're staying in somewhere like Guangdong province, like where Winston and I are at right now, in the major cities in Guangdong province are Shenzhen, Guangzhou, and maybe Dongguan and Zhuhai. If you need to leave the country every 90 days, it's convenient and easy because you're just across the border from Hong Kong. So a lot of people who live here, you know, are on these kind of visas, and they just go to Hong Kong for like, after 90 days, they just go to Hong Kong for like a day or so, and then they return to China, and then they continue with their visa. So that's an option too. If you don't have a company to sponsor you for a work visa, you can also get a business visa. And there are a lot of visa companies in China, many of which specialize in dealing with foreigners, because obviously that's what they do, and you know, so they can speak English. That can help you with the whole process. Obviously, you have to pay a little bit of money, but it's not that large compared to your potential benefits if you start a business or get a decent job in China.
Yeah, is there anything you want to add to that, Andrew?
I'll just say that considering that so many foreigners are, more and more foreigners are going to China, I don't think it's very difficult to get a tourist visa and even a work visa, because so many foreigners, like so many foreign nationals, are getting work visas in China. But yeah, it's much... If you find employment in China, usually the company, usually the company is going to take care of all these procedures for you. And, yeah, other than that, it shouldn't be too difficult. And, yeah, it's not that hard to... just one more thing. You don't have to go to Hong Kong to renew your Chinese visa. You can do it in Shenzhen at, like, certain... destinations in Shenzhen that usually at certain like train stations that have these visa renewal services, like these approved visa renewal services. I've had my Chinese visa renewed in both Shenzhen and Hong Kong, so you don't actually have to leave mainland China to renew your Chinese visa.
Oh yeah, yeah. What I meant was, yeah, you can definitely renew your visa within China. But what I meant was, if you're on a business or tourist visa, not a work visa, like Winston actually, you need to step out of the country or mainland China every 90 days or so. Hong Kong is a convenient place to do that at, because it's just across the border from Shenzhen. But obviously if you're someplace north, like if you're in Shanghai or you're in Beijing, then you may need to fly to Taiwan or fly to Japan or something. It's not so, go to Russia or something. It's not going to be as convenient anymore. But if you're in South China, yeah, that's a very convenient option.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah, I wouldn't go to Russia to do a visa run though, because you need a visa to get into Russia too. Yeah, for an American, a visa to China, I mean, is it easy to get, or is it expensive, or can you just get it at any travel agency? Or
should be easy.
Yeah, I mean, Americans don't... I mean, yeah, Americans have a very easy time getting visas. I mean, in Singapore, we also have an easy time getting visas in China. So, I mean, if you're from developed countries on the whole, you won't face any problems. It's only people from, like... developing countries or third world countries that are more likely to face issues with getting visas into China.
Yeah, and so I guess the biggest hurdle is the language barrier and the fear of a different culture, the fear of the unknown in coming here. It's not really the visa, but you know, amazingly, in my travels in China, in the few months that I've traveled here, I've actually met a couple of Westerners who don't speak any Chinese at all, yet they're traveling alone around China, and they manage to get around. I mean, they always find someone that'll help them. They always find someone that speaks some English. They still manage to get around, and that really proves that if there's a way, if there's a will, then there's a way. Because, you know, if they're bold enough to do it, you know, they'll find a way. If somebody will help them, and you know, perhaps you know, God helps you if you help yourself too. You know, there's that saying. So yeah, it's just, you know, it's just getting into the fear of the unknown. I mean, before I came into China, I was nervous too. It's the fear of the unknown. But for a lot of people, there's that language barrier. And I don't know, I guess some people are good at traveling alone and figuring out a new country, and some aren't. It just depends on the person and how brave they are and how good at it they are. Some people are just good at that sort of thing.
I think for a lot of foreigners in China, the best thing they can do to you know, to get help in getting around China and survive, living and surviving well in China, is to find a Chinese girlfriend, basically. A Chinese girlfriend will, you know, be very streetwise and savvy, and she'll just know all the best ways, all the most cost-effective, convenient ways to, you know, to live and get things done in China, you know, and ensure that you don't get ripped off, you know, when you do stuff in China, you know. So, yeah, I mean, that's what a lot of foreigners seem to do over here. Even if they can't speak much Chinese, they find a local girlfriend who can speak some English, and you know, and she takes care of a lot of his stuff in these respects.
Yeah, so the thing is, a lot of Western expats, they tend to gravitate toward the Philippines because there's not a language barrier there, because in the Philippines, people still speak basic English, so that draws more American expats probably than China does. But And also, the women in the Philippines are probably more easygoing. But the thing is, I think China's a better place to find a girlfriend or a wife, because there's a much higher percentage of attractive women than in the Philippines, and the women here tend to be more educated and wise. So, so in that sense, they make higher quality companions, and they age better too, and they're able to go out and find their own work, whereas most Filipinos are unemployed and have trouble finding work. And even if they do find work in their own country, the Philippines pays so little that it's not even worth it to even work there. Because a lot of people make like $7 a day in the Philippines for a 12-hour shift, and it's not really worth it to work at all. So, yeah, so you can't blame it all on them. You know, obviously their economy is messed up and prevents that. So, but yeah, but with a Chinese partner, I mean, you have someone who can make money and contribute to the relationship,
yeah, exactly.
And is more educated, more refined, and
also, so one more thing I noticed about Filipinos is that they talk a lot, but they don't have, like, they're not as savvy, they're not as intelligent as the average Chinese woman, and it gets irritating when they try to talk to you all the time, but it's just like these little things, like nothing meaningful.
Yeah, well, at least Filipinos are more playful and you know, childish, so, I mean, some guys like that. They like girls that are childish and playful, so there is some good in that, but if you're looking for a wife who can help you with your business or run a business or be your business partner, I mean, a Chinese woman is definitely better at running a business than a Filipino.
Yeah,
and in fact, in the Philippines, most of the big industries and businesses are run by either Chinese people or
Chinese
Filipinos. Yeah, so even in the Philippines, the Chinese are the ones that run the big important businesses, because they're much better at that sort of thing. They just have a better business sense and are more efficient and organized.
Yeah, another point I'd like to bring up as well is that, you know, keep in mind if you date a Filipina or women from other, you know, poor countries in Southeast Asia, is that chances are, after some time, she's probably going to ask you for, like, you know, to help support her and her family, you know, ask you for a stipend, you know, the family's going to need help, you know. If you're a foreigner, if you're a Westerner, you know, they immediately look at you as higher class, and they expect you to be able to provide for them, and not just them, but their family and their extended family in many cases. So In China, that rarely happens at all, because in general, I mean, China has a good balance. It's not too poor, but it's also not too rich. So, you know, the women are able to take care of themselves. They don't really need you to support their families in general. You know, there are a lot of, you know, well-off women here now as well. You know, so, but it's also not at a level where they're so independent and you know, so well-off that they feel no need for men at all, and they don't even need it. They look down on foreign men or anything. You know.
Yeah, the problem I had in the Philippines was that I got the sense that the women that I was dating, like, they were really poor, so they were with me for economic motivations, for economic reasons, and
yeah.
so I felt kind of used in a sense, and I just felt like because of that there was an economic motivation that the relationship wasn't as genuine or true as a relationship, you know, with a Chinese woman, for example. So, you know, but I'm only speaking for myself, okay? I don't speak for everyone, because obviously everyone is different, and some people are happier in the Philippines with their wife or girlfriend there, and some people are happier in Thailand, and some people are happy with their Vietnamese wife. So every guy is different, and I don't speak for everyone. I'm just saying that this is true for me, and other guys may be happier elsewhere. So I don't claim that every guy should come to China, or that I should tell everyone what to do. I'm just sharing my experiences for people to consider. That's all. So I acknowledge that, yeah, some other countries may be better for other people. It just depends on the person. So anyways, I guess one more thing we could talk about is that, amazingly, China is probably one of the safest countries I've ever been in. I mean, I don't see any violence. I see people arguing and yelling at each other outside, but I don't see any physical violence. And so the safety is amazing. You can walk around at night everywhere, even at 2 a.m., and it's still very safe, even in dark streets. No one attacks you or mugs you. Nobody really mugs you in China the way they do in America at gunpoint or at knife point and tells you to give them their money. I mean, they just don't do it that way. If someone's going to scam you, it's probably going to be in a sly, indirect way, but it's not in a hostile way at gunpoint like or a mugging like you see in you know, in the West, or especially in America. And also, people can't buy handguns here, so you're not going to see like school shootings or something or gun violence. So China is amazingly safe, and people are very non-violent. And they might yell and argue at each other, or even with you if you're in an argument, but it doesn't get physical like it does in America.
Yeah, I've actually noticed that you know, China is, even Chinese people on average over here are even less physically violent than maybe like, say, in Singapore. Where we have a lot more Western influence. So it seems that to some extent violence is, among youths at least, is glamorized in many other more Westernized countries. But in China, there isn't that feeling. I rarely ever, especially in Southern China, it's very rare to see people resort to physical violence. They may lose their tempers at each other, shout at each other. But the physical violence doesn't seem to come into the picture at all. I mean, sometimes, like, you know, if like, say, in a crowded subway or in a very crowded place, you may accidentally or you may sometimes even deliberately shove someone just to get him out of the way. But generally, they don't lose their temper at all. They're very cool. I mean, I don't know if you guys have noticed that. They're okay with a little bit of physical contact. You know, they're not sensitive about that. Whereas in some other countries, like, if you accidentally shove someone or, you know, brush them aside, they may actually start becoming violent, even over a small thing like that. You know, people are very sensitive about physical contact. You know, I don't get that feeling over here, you know. So
yeah, and I would guess that maybe in a country where there's more social connection, people aren't as antsy and paranoid and angry at each other as in a country with no social connection, like America. So that would be my theory on one reason why. Also, you know, people who have hot tempers are usually unhappy, whereas people who are happy and healthy and wholesome don't usually have a hot temper. So, you know, that could be a reason for it too. Like in America, maybe people are just so empty and miserable deep down at having to be fake every day that they're just unhappy and they're only pretending to be happy. So they're like a smiling depressive. And so they have, people have hotter tempers and get more irritated. and have a more sense of entitlement. Whereas when you have a country with social connection, with an authentic culture, you don't feel as empty and miserable. So maybe you don't have as much of a hot temper. But of course, a lot of Chinese people have hot tempers and yell, but it's just not as dangerous or bad as, you know, as I've seen in America. It's not as trivial.
Yeah, I mean, from my knowledge, people may be a little bit more aggressive in the north, like especially in northeastern China, what's known as Dongbei in China. I mean, generally people are known to be a little bit, you know, taller, bigger, and a bit more direct and aggressive over there. I've been to Beijing. I've not been at Dongbei myself, so I'm not sure. I don't know if Andrew can shed any light on this, but yeah, I mean, on the whole, China is a, you know, very safe place.
Yeah, well,
so you have freedom from violence.
Yeah. Walking out at night in China than I do here in Vancouver. Even in China, even in dark alleys, I feel a lot more safe than like in dark alleys here in Vancouver. Because, well, yeah, there are people around, which made me feel more safe. But even when there weren't many people around, Chinese people in general have like a less aggressive nature. Of course, there are like certain exceptions, like in the northeast of China. Well, I can't really say much about Dongbei, about the northeast of China, because the only city in the northeast of China that I visited was Dalian, and I was only there as a tourist. I never had the opportunity to really like get a sense of the city's vibe and the people. So yeah, I can't say much about that, but yeah, overall, Chinese people are less aggressive than Westerners.
Yeah, so you have freedom from violence and aggression here. I mean, that's another freedom, I guess, that you have in China. Anyways, yeah, it's probably getting late where you are, so we'd better wrap this up. And we have somewhere to go, too. So,
yeah.
But I'm really glad that we could do this glad that we could do this podcast because, you know, three people talking about something sounds a lot more credible than one person just ranting about it, you know, on a podcast or on video. So, yeah, when we have three people, everything we say sounds more valid and credible. So that's why I'm glad we could do this kind of thing. But,
And thanks for staying up, Andrew. I know it's about 5 a.m. over there, right?
I'm a night owl.
Yeah, so this is usual for you. We could do this every night, huh?
Usual for me.
Yeah,
Yeah,
but if you think of any more topics that we can discuss, we can do another podcast in the future and
sure.
And talk about that again.
Yeah.
Sure.
But this one was great. I mean, we covered a lot of ground, went into a lot of deep subjects, and gave a lot of eye-opening truths and secrets and revelations that the average American or the average person actually in the world probably doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So,
totally agree.
Yeah, thanks, guys. This was great. We should do it again.
Yeah.
Definitely great.
All right. So.
Okay, well, get some sleep over there in Canada and hope to see you back in China soon and hope we can all hang out.
I'll be back in China in the near future in the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, try to see if you can get a study abroad program or something.
Yeah, try to see if you can get a study abroad program or something.
Sure, I'll try. I don't have enough credits right now, but I'll try going on one next year.
Yeah, because, I mean, once you've been here and you go back to the West, I mean, realize it's painful because you just realize, you know, what what you're missing and how, you know, it just makes you realize how much more dysfunctional and unnatural the Western countries are than if you had never left them. So you just got to keep the faith or whatever and realize that there are better horizons out there. And fortunately, you know that, whereas the average person does not. So, So hang in there, and hope to see you someday so we could all meet in person, and yeah, that would be great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, have a good night, and yeah, we'll talk to you next time, and
yeah.
Thank you all for listening if you've gotten this far, and hope you've learned something from it.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Thanks, guys.
Okay.
Thanks.
Good night.
Thanks,
Andrew.
Scott. Good night. See ya.
Good night.
By the way, I forgot to mention a few things during the podcast. The Chinese Canadian that we talked to, Andrew, his username on the forum is Bao3Niang. That's Bao3Niang. So if you want to look up his posts in the forum, that's the username to search. And my friend next to me was Ethan SG. That's ETHAN_SG. Ethan SG. So that's his username if you want to look up his posts. And I also forgot to give out the web address of my website, because this podcast may be up on YouTube or other websites. And if so, then the listeners may not be familiar with my website, so I should give it to them just in case. So anyways, the URL to my website is www.happierabroad.com. That's happier, H-A-P-P-I-E-R, abroad, A-B-R-O-A-D.com, happierabroad.com. There you can listen to more of our podcasts and interviews and check out the material on our site and participate in our discussion forum where you can talk about these topics that we've talked about in this podcast. Thanks for listening and see you all next time.